Well, hello everyone. Today it happens that Louise is out of town doing her civic duty at SILGA, the Southern Interior Local Government Association. And so I am joined by Phil McIntyre-Paul. He's my partner this morning. Hi, Phil.
Hey, Tracy.
How are you doing?
Great. Pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm so excited that you're here because we're working on a massive project together, and we'll be talking all about it. It's one of the biggest things that I've done at the gallery, and it's probably a very tiny thing in terms of your projects, but it's still pretty exciting to be working with you.
And the same. And this is the first you've said it's one of the biggest things that you've done. I've just been impressed by how you're rolling with it and pulling all these pieces together. So, that's good.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of, sometimes I think, what have I decided to do here? Yeah, we're wrangling 45 different people, artists, guides, photographers, in a mashup called Trail Mix. And it is a project and exhibition and publication that has spanned about a year and a half so far, right?
And it's huge.
It is.
Because you're often working with single artists for curated shows, or maybe a small group of six or eight or ten. This is not a group of six or eight.
No,
or ten.
Yeah. This is like herding cats.
Yeah, and the publication, that's, you haven't done that before either.
I've never done a publication. This will be a real legacy because we've talked about it in the past. We've had a couple of big shows, like the bicycle exhibition and the storytelling exhibition. I feel like, oh, taking that all down and not having this, you know, some kind of, you know, tactile record of it, right? Where you can pick it up and leaf through it. It feels a bit sad. And I recognize, like, everything exhibition is ethereal. You have it, you experience it, you go away, you're done. But sometimes so much work goes into these and you feel like,
let's extend the conversation, right? So it actually takes that forward. But here's the cool thing with this one is part art guide, part coffee table. I can live with this and keep engaging with the story. Part trail guide.
Right? Yeah.
So suddenly, like, it's actually got a functional use, well, in a different kind of way. Like, it's going to engage the story in a physical way as well as a conversation.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of it's like a gift book where you can really enjoy the process of going through some of these experiences with these teams, but also take it out on the trail with you in your backpack. It's going to be small enough to be able to actually find your way. It's amazing.
Cool.
We're doing everything. Okay. So I'm going to go back to the very, very beginning. So now you and I have seen each other at a lot of events and funding meetings over the past few years, because you with the Shoes Up Trail Alliance and me with the Arts Council, we do big projects that often gets funding, say, from the Shoes Up Community Foundation. And that is where we were when we met and first started talking about this a couple of years ago. But before we even talk about that, tell me about the Shoeswap Trail Alliance and how you talk about wrangling, how you wrangled all of the different user groups in the area and all the different trails to make this one single organization.
Interesting.
In 2 minutes or less.
In 2 minutes. Yeah, that's right. So Tracy, just for those of you listening, Tracy has been really clear, because some people know me and they're like, how is he going to pull this off? So here I go. This is the elevator speech. It was an impossible idea that wasn't just me or other individuals. It was a wee conversation. And so probably about, I would say 12 or 13 years ago now, really was when it kind of formally coalesced. But it came out of some other conversations that had been happening that, again, involved community leadership. And in 2002, there was a group of us worked with economic development and Shoeswap Tourism on a tourism opportunity strategy. And there was, you know, it really looked at the front and back country and opportunities that we were, you know, that we might be realizing, we might not be realizing. And it was really clear that we have this, we live in a remarkable place. Mm-hmm. But consistently people kept saying, yeah, but you know, it actually is kind of tricky to just go for a walk, or, you know, even, you know, the mountain biking community was saying, you know, we've got some really great trails, but they're far and few between. We'd really need to see them become more formalized. And there was no signage. And if you spoke to somebody who didn't know they were there, say, well, how do you even find out about these things? So we pulled a whole group of folks together, like literally economic development, health, Sequepnik leadership, municipal regional leadership, the land management world, and sat down at a big table and said, look, you know, we've got all these little needs and things that could happen, some little projects happening. But we don't have the resources of small, tiny communities. And then the conversation was, what if we work together? Could we do something impossible? Because it was, and you know, it's kind of like, that's what we do here in the Shuswap.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
Like I just keep looking at every, like the Arts Council, it's a great example. We had all these models around us, the Salmar Society, the just everything, right? The credit, you know, everything we do is impossible.
Yeah.
But we don't care. We just get together.
We do it anyway.
Yeah. And here we are doing another thing.
Yeah.
So out of that grew this commitment, this desire to collaborate. But what's also interesting was the whole conversation around what is it we're really doing here? I mean, we're focused on trails and really we're focused on how do we move in the landscape? And we realized that this is a relationship conversation mm-hmm. between each other and the landscape and on all sorts of levels, right? So if we have a conversation in terms of being in Squamish territory, well, are we doing that well? That we've got a lot of work to do. Is it possible that these trails, for whatever reason, whether it's a mountain biking trail or a pathway just to get kids to school so they don't have to get in a car all the time, mm-hmm. how is that helping to define who we are? And we realize, wait a minute, this is storytelling. These are lines on the ground that manifest themselves simply because we move to be with each other and in the landscape, and they help to define us, and we define them. So suddenly we started to sound like artists.
Yeah.
Right? So
you do sound
a
lot like us crazies. Yeah, well, I mean, right. We think about that integrated approach all the time, right? That we can't separate art from culture, from society, from recreation, from our just day-to-day living. We can't separate it. It's part of us.
Absolutely. So all of a sudden this, sometimes I kind of tease and say, you know, actually the trail lines has nothing to do with trails. And everyone's like, well, what are you talking about? And it's like, because literally every single day, sometimes hundreds of us throughout the region are doing everything we're doing is related to trails, but really in the end, it has everything to do with relationships with each other and with the landscape and this question of, well, what story do we want to tell and how will we tell it?
Yeah.
So that's a fundamental, I mean, I remember when I went to the bike show you guys did and went, ah, these guys, we're doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're really trying to engage with each other and figure out how do we do this? How do we live together better? How do we be ourselves better?
Well, that's culture, right? It's the definition of culture is the ways we live together. And so how more encompassing can you get? How we live together and how we move about.
I was thinking as I was coming over, like, oh, so what will we talk about? But we've just had our trail building workshop. And so every spring we host a trail building workshop, and every spring we think, oh, this is it. We've hit the max. And every spring new people show up and say, hey, this is really exciting. I want to be part of this. So we just had it a couple of weeks ago, and Veda Roberge, our project manager, and Sutra Brett, our technical trail specialist, along with Damon Kent this year, who's one of our Uber volunteers and trail specialists. Jim Mabey, often our sort of senior trail planner, often joins us as well, but he wasn't able to this time around. But anyways, the three or four of them usually lead this. And Sutra, in the theory session, always goes, we always tease him afterwards saying, oh, you went really arts on us there. Because he gets people thinking about what is it about these pathways and trails that compel us to walk them and use them or ride bicycles on them or just even explore them. And he gets people to close their eyes and then asks this question and says, imagine your favorite trail. Imagine you're moving on it. What's happening inside you? And then he says, you know, for me, it's all about what's happening inside. It's this experience inside. And absolutely. So really the trail, it's not the physical trail. It's the experience that it's engaging you in. So again, right? Like, and we literally are teasing him saying, well, man, you know.
But he's designing an experience.
Exactly.
Right? So he's inside. He's a designer. And so it's kind of a, like, just like what Louise talks a lot about this on this show, about designing spaces. It's not about decorating spaces. Designing spaces makes it so that it's easy and enjoyable for us to move about.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And everything we've been doing, a lot of research in the last two or three years on active transportation, how we better improve our built environment, right? Our communities and stuff. And design becomes one of the fundamental conversations about how that happens. And it's interesting, the integration with art and culture and design and how that actually can make a community healthier, like literally.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Without us even really starting to think about it, because mm-hmm. our space is starting to help us think about it. So,
yeah.
Anyway, and we kind of that's the backdrop.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's pretty good because that all fits together. I mean, that's how we end up, you know, in going off in all directions on this show, because with art and design, it kind of encompasses everything, and designing our space and our livable landscape, it's all there.
Yeah. I should say it's been a crazy journey for the last, like, we're into sort of formally 11 years, and this December, formally signed, everyone signed on to a, sort of a whole new expression of the relationship called the Shuswap Trails Roundtable. And so all orders of government, Squepnik, local, municipal, regional, the provincial land managers, all the trail user groups, different sectors like forestry, arts and culture, you guys, the paddle society. So we're talking
right,
water,
the blue trail.
And blue ways and green ways, interior health, the school, you know, educators, like just everyone.
And we're talking, when you talk about user groups, you're talking everybody from equestrian to snowmobilers to
everyone's
cross country skier.
Table.
Yeah. This is huge.
Yeah, it's how, and the fundamental question is how will we move and relate with each other and the landscape in a way that actually is that's sustainable for the future
and meaningful to individuals.
And the Squepnik communities bring, I mean, to the table, one of the values they bring is we're not just talking like a 10-year strategic plan. The phrase that's being brought to the table through the Squepnik leadership is we're talking seven generations. We want to be looking out that, like, this is long-term kind of conversation. So it's big.
It is big.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of blows your mind sometimes, doesn't it? How much, like, what things you're doing now are going to be here in a century and maybe even five centuries, right? Like, you're talking about building a legacy that's not just about you and your group and your generation. This is forever.
It should inform and maybe define, but also set up the opportunity for us to keep defining and doing things better together.
Yes.
Into the future.
Well, it's a great role model organization. I think that, you know, you guys stand up amongst all of these groups saying, look what collaboration can do for you. And you're getting so big though. Like
that's why the tentacles connect, right? Like it's like,
I've seen your chart in your office of projects and people and little dots and God.
It's about supporting people in the places they are. Right. So really it's not about me or you know, Veda or Sutra or, you know, someone on the board doing it. It's about how do we create at least some organizational support for those things that are naturally emerging that make sense and fit this kind of sense of conversation.
Yeah, and that's kind of, that leads into how we build these teams for this particular project, because there were over 300 trails to choose from in terms of choosing trails, and we knew we had to choose only 10 to 15.
Well, you started with 10, only 10.
Yeah.
And that was hard for me to start with.
Yeah, too, yeah. Right? Our first meeting when you said, I don't think we can do that.
I think you said 10. Your favorite trails. I was like, how do I do? I can't do that.
Yeah. And so then we decided to go with sort of a regional look. Let's look at the map and make sure that we're covering different territories, different elevations, different kinds of environments, the ecology. So that went, that helped a little bit in terms of spreading it out, but then trying to even narrow it down from there and then find the stewards that are really dedicated to those trails, because so many people wanted to be involved with this project.
That's the hardest part. Like, it's the number of people who, like, honestly, we're talking all of us, right? Like, what's our population right now in the region? 36,000 or something. Like, so that's how many little groups we should have had.
You should have had that many teams.
There's one for everyone. We all have our favorite place, the place we're passionate about.
Yeah.
Barry Lopez talks about, he says, you know, there's local indigenes. There's people who just know a place so well. They can't tell you the facts about it, but they just know it.
Yeah.
And that's who we went to see if we could pull together.
Yeah. So the reason why I'm going to go way back to the beginning of our hour here and say the reason why we decided to do this is because when we were at a community foundation meeting where we were picking up a grant for some other project that we were doing, thank you, community foundation, because they're awesome.
Yeah.
We had this conversation in the sort of reception afterwards about how we basically do the same thing.
And you had done the bike show, and I came to you and said, you do know that, like, it's a storytelling show. And I said, you do know that's what we do. We think about that with storytelling ourselves. So at some point we should do something collaboratively
When you said that was the first time I'd ever thought about the trails being a storytelling thing, right? Like, I never thought about it like that before.
Because we do think of the technical path on the ground, right?
Transportation, yeah. Recreation, yeah. Right? Like, that's how I thought of them. And yeah, like, I mean, I had little kids. We used to go to Coyote Park. I thought about all that kind of time as bush time, right? You just need to be able to breathe those phenols and whatever else that the trees are giving off. Yeah. I never think about it as telling stories.
Yeah.
And that those trails are stories in themselves. And all the people that come before and all the people that come after, right? It all ties together.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you really opened my eyes about that, about how the Trail Alliance sees it that way.
Well, and I'd had a couple of conversations prior to speaking to you. I'd sort of had you on my radar screen because like Blair Acton out at the Squilax Hostel, she's got this little door in the forest that goes to a little path down to the creek and it just hangs there, right? Like it's actually a door from a house, but it's in the forest. So it's totally out of place, but it's like something from Narnia, right? It's kind of just inviting you in. It's this gateway. Mm-hmm. Totally. You know, just the physical presence of it is, you know, the art of it is what engages you and pulls you beyond. And then, Bonnie Baker out in Blind Bay had, just after Ted Bashkalupo had passed away and died, she said, you know, it'd be really nice to, you know, maybe commission an artist each year to, you know, just spend some time on one of the trails and just kind of express. And I'd love to do something for, you know, MacArthur Heights, which was, you know, Ted's favorite trail. And I'm kind of like, you know, it's funny you should mention that because I've just had this conversation when I'd spoken to you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like it was burbling out in different places. Yeah. People were just saying we should connect this. And, and there's artists around the world who do this. They walk, they're movement artists. They walk in the landscape and then try and express what's happening. So
And you brought a couple of those to my attention too, and I should have brought a list because there's a lot of exciting things going on in the world in terms of trails of storytelling and artists and of course a lot of environmental landform art that isn't even accessible unless you're willing to hike up a mountain and things like that. So okay, so from there we got this concept of actually selecting the trails. We sat down as a small committee and met and decided on trails, decided on the representation in the region. Tried to decide on guides. It was still kind of open, seeing who was available. This was a year-long project, so we needed people that were actually here on the ground and ready to commit to this.
Yeah.
And then we went after the artists. So we did a call out and for applications, and we tried to get a balance of media. So we had not just acrylic painters, for instance, which is very plein air. Like that's a lot of people that do plein air painting do acrylic because it's easier, right, outside and oils. Yeah. You finish this awesome painting, then you stick it in a bag and bring it home, and it's a mess by the time you get home. You know what that's like.
I was going to say, I've had it for those of you listening. I had a chance to go out with Tracy and see how this works, and it's as evolving as the landscape and the movement of the snow and the weather. Yeah. It's the artwork doesn't look like what it started as at the beginning.
And so in fact, that was an acrylic, right? But because it was snowing and
cold,
everything stayed wet and drippy.
Yeah.
And it made a whole different piece by the time I was done. And then I put it in a plastic bag and threw it on the back of the snowmobile. And then by the time we got home, it was a whole different piece. Look, it was a very gray day after all.
The whole thing evolved.
Yeah. So it's not all about sort of the picking the one media. We did we've got a pastel artist and we've got a paperworks artist and
sculpture and three-dimensional.
So we did go through this list, but of course we had other people who were so super keen and had done such nice work that we expanded it a little and did these off-site venues as well. So we've got two on-site, like on the site trail installation artists that are part of this whole project.
So folks will actually have to go and walk those trails to experience the work that they've done.
To see the artwork that's produced.
Yeah, really excited about that.
Yeah. And then three off-site venues. So three teams who did the whole project, but the work won't be in the gallery. It'll be at the Blue Canoe, that's where we are, at Prisa Lighting across the street from the gallery, and at the Prestige Inn. And that's one of the Raven Trail teams.
Yeah, so it's perfect connection there, right? Because it's right on the trail. Yeah.
So this is a really, like, it's going to be downtown. It's going to be on the trail. It's in the art gallery. It's kind of everywhere.
Yeah, and literally spanning, you know, Kingfisher to Chase to, I think, Hummel Milk Lake shows up in the Upper Seymour.
Okay, well, I can go through that. So, Hummel Willamette Lake is probably our most northern.
Most northern, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So that team was Lisa Figueroa and Jim Cooperman, Kathy Cooperman. They went up there in a canoe and had a picnic on the beach and had this wonderful experience. And now Lisa's creating this large work and Jim's got photographs and it's very exciting. Yeah. That's going to be a nice presentation.
And Tracy, probably helpful to say, like, so the teams are the artists who there was a call and a selection process that would, and that's where we leaned on your expertise because that's what you guys know how that works and do that. So a group of artists were selected, but then we also, the team is a guide who knows the trail well. And a number of them are Sequepnik guys and just from a variety of backgrounds and different kinds of trail use. And then there's the photographer who's
I forgot about that little detail. That's so kind of an important part.
You've really put three artists together, which is entertaining just to see that process. But the photographer is also documenting the experience of them, this photojournalist kind of exercise. And then the guide is actually doing a written story on the experience as well. So you've got these three different art forms working together in these teams. It's totally cool.
Literary too. Well, that's a big part of the publication and a big part of the exhibition too, the stories. So we asked each team to, to have an experience together out on the trail. And this could be 1, 2, 3, 5 times, right? Whatever they want to do. Different seasons. Lots of them have really taken this seriously and have gone out all different times. And, but the guide's role is to not only share the experience of the trail and help them see different, features that are unique to the trail, but also to develop the story afterwards and then submit it for our publication and for the exhibition. So they definitely did have a big artistic role in this whole process. Yeah. The photographer, I think that for some of the photographers, it was a bit of a challenge because they weren't sure which they were doing. Were they being the art photographer and capturing,
the landscape? Yeah.
Or were they documenting the experience? Yeah. And I'm trying to tell them at the beginning, these first couple of meetings that we had, group meetings, you're going to do both. Sorry, but you have to do both. Yeah. And I think that some of the product that they've come up with have integrated it really nicely. Yeah. Taking pictures of action shots where the artist is sitting and sketching, but also capturing these super awesome compositions and light and shadow and beautiful things, right? Like, so I think that all of the photographers have done an exemplary job.
At the end, it's impossible to be in the landscape and not be completely impacted by the movement of everything that's happening, weather and light and the landscape and the natural world around you and the people that are around you. So it doesn't matter who you are. Whether you like it or not, you're an artist in your own way, right?
It's true, I guess.
Our animal bodies are absorbing and interpreting. Yeah. But these three in this team have this opportunity to express that back to us and say, here's the conversation we had, and this is what...
And I think that there was a lot of unsure feelings at the beginning. A lot of them contacted me saying, well, we're not really quite sure how to start this. And I had to tell all of them, we're not really sure how you're supposed to start this either. What we'd really like you to do is just get together for coffee and talk about, pick a day that you can all be on the trail. Go, just figure it out, right? Like, kind of let it happen, let it evolve. And all of the teams have come back to me and said, oh my gosh, we had such a good time. Yeah. We didn't know what we were doing. We just, and it was, in fact, one team story starts out with, it's laughable to think of how complicated it was for us to pick a day and time that we could all be there. Only three people, right? But that once they got it together and spent the day, they had an amazing time and learned from each other and saw, some of them are very familiar with the trail, but had such a different experience with the trail that it changed it for them. So, you just know that you're impacting these people by letting them kind of have their own, direction and experience.
Well, the trail's demanded of us too, because most from someone who walks the same trail every day, they'll tell you it's never the same trail because if you walk it with expectation, after a while, it will start to diminish and it'll become, there's a great quote from a cosmologist, Brian Swim. He says, if you can't go into the forest, but not be changed, literally, like you're breathing oxygen in and out and exchanging it. You come back a different person physically, literally your molecules are exchanging itself. So on that level, as a scientist, he's saying, but he says, you're also, if you open yourself, you, in a little tiny way, you'll be enchanted and be impacted. And he says, you won't, that you're not attending to that, paying attention to it, because the punishment is boredom. So it's like, whoa. So those moments where you feel bored, it's like, maybe I just need to take a deep breath and put my expectations aside and just pay attention to what's right here, right now. And that's what those teams in essence are doing. They get out there because there is no expectation because we've never done this before.
Yeah,
right? So everyone's nervous, right? What if nothing happens? Well, nothing can't not happen. Yeah. So something happens.
Let's figure that sentence out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
No, that's fantastic. What a really big, mind-blowing thing to think. Punishment is the boredom.
It's boredom, yeah. You'll know that if you... I forget how he says this. You'll know if you haven't been attentive because you'll be punished, and the punishment is boredom.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think we should make a little sign that says that, right? Yeah. I mean, I just like to tell my kids that. That's what I want them to know. If you say you're bored, it's because you're being punished.
The first part is frightening, though. He actually says, before you enter this forest, understand that you are that you will not return the same person. So yeah. It's kind of, there is a warning. Like, so there's almost like there should be warnings at the trailhead.
You
know, because if you look at our trailhead, it says, you know, use with caution, and it talks about blowdown. If it's windy out here, it's a good idea maybe not to use a trail because trees come down, and certainly there's bear warnings and stuff. Maybe we should have, you know, warning, you know, understand that you may not be the same person who entered
you will
this
not,
you will
definitely
not be the
not
same
be
person.
The same person.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. I like that.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
actually art, right? That would be trail art. To put those signs up.
Yeah.
Because you're saying something, first of all, that as humans, we seem to need signs for everything. Yeah. And then you're saying, that this is a warning, right? Like a terrible thing that you might be changed. It's kind of...
That's good. Now, see, now I've got... that's the next one. It'll be just signs.
Yeah.
Like an Adbusters kind of approach to like alternative signs for trails. Yeah.
Sweet. So we got our next idea. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's just get through this
you
one
heard
first.
It here first here, right?
So, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Okay. So just quickly, because we're going to go to another break in a few minutes here, but... I want to just get quickly to some of the trails that we've covered.
Yeah.
Okay. So we did the Humboldt Lake. Skamekin Lake has also got a team. Karen Oliver, Ian Clay, Shirley Bates taking care of that one.
And the Equestrian Association manages that. So suddenly you've got this whole equestrian experience there.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing too, right? Getting a balance, making sure that mountain bikers were kind of represented and, Scatcherd Mountain, that's near Chase.
Yeah. Yeah. So David Lepp. So I mean, that's his baby, but Chase and Adams Lake Band and the Scotland Lake, their relationship growing there. And so you've got Scatcherd Mountain that overlooks the Chase and the Athens River and
and Wendy Hunter the artist and Martin Kylo the photographer
and they've had a bit of an adventure too, right?
Yes,
this tiny little trail, but they got cars stuck
There was snow still up there, right? And so they thought, oh, it's a beautiful day, let's go, and then there was still snow at the top, so they got stuck in Martin's truck and they had to dig it out, but they wanted to walk. Wendy saw a picture of the car, which is an old abandoned 1947 something or other, on its side, rusted out, and she saw a picture that David, because David has created a brochure on this trail. She saw the picture in the brochure and said, I want to see the car. So they were trying to get up to the car and they ended up having to walk the rest of the way because they got stuck. So I mean, adventures were had. Anyway, and then Helena Lookout at Scotch Creek,
right?
Patrick Hughes and Yana Mainprize went to that one.
Yeah.
And Patrick acted as his artist and photographer together because he's an amazing photographer as well. He's a sculptor that'll be in the exhibition, and his idea for the installation is fantastic. I can't wait to see that. And already it's time to take a break. So we'll go through some of the rest of the trails when we come back. I know it's like
so fast.
You keep
this is fun.
I know, like I keep thinking, oh, I got to mention this. It's such a massive project. We could talk about it for three shows. Like it's just been enormous.
Well, let's.
We're barely going to be able to contain this to an hour. That's for sure.
So folks just have to come.
They'll just have to come to the exhibition,
find the trails,
buy the book, right?
Visit the offsite.
Go to the trails or have art at it. Well, see all the trails. And that's the thing about the book. We'll talk about the book towards the end of the show, but they'll have the trail, like where it is and how to kind of, have the same lovely kind of experience that these teams had within the book. So you can take it out and make it your own project to actually visit every trail in the project.
With a snippet of the stories, right?
Yeah. And the artwork and the photographs. I mean, I'm thrilled that we're going to have a book. Like, I'm so thrilled. Okay. Next trail on the list, Margaret Falls, Reinecker Creek.
Right. One that everyone knows, right? Iconic, but evolving as we speak. And here's a whole new.
Yeah. And Maureen Howard is the artist. And she has experience from when she was a little kid, because she remembers her mother taking her to have tea with the family whose property it was. And you used to have to get.
Right.
Yeah. That's right. Jesse Harold. And you used to have to get permission from Jesse to go on the trail.
Yeah.
Like that's how far
before
back her
it was
experience
a BC park.
Was.
Yeah. Or a protected area.
Yeah. So it's kind of wonderful that have her as part of that experience and matching up these guides and artists and photographers to making sure that they're kind of historically in a place where they're excited about and not too familiar with the trail, right? That was a challenge too at the beginning. So.
And is that Ed McDonald?
And Ed McDonald is the guide,
So
and Jim Hoskins is the photographer.
The photographer. So you've got, you know, like Jim is, he's out tromping the mountains and the hills around here all over the place. And then you've got Ed, who's like one of our, he's one of our indigenes, one of our naturalists who just knows stuff about what's growing.
Yeah. Right? So. I think it was very challenging when they provided their story. Maureen added a huge amount that Ed had shared about just the flora and fauna of the area.
Yeah.
And I had to tell them, I'm sorry. I know that it's exciting that you learned all this stuff from Ed, but we have only a tiny space in the publication for everyone's story.
Yeah.
And so we had to limit the words. And I feel like it's really hard. It's tough to limit that because they were very excited with what they learned from him.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it'll be in the exhibition, though. Like, it's just the publication that has a real limit on the words, but everybody's story in full bloom will be in the exhibition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, and also an opportunity to kind of say, well, what else has emerged from this and where does that need to go? Like, I know with Ed, I'm sure we'll be having a conversation about how can we capture that and get it onto our website, for example, and link it to the trail itself. Because that's, you know, there's an opportunity for us to take other pieces of this and actually expand and enhance everything that we've been doing, which I should put in a plug, right? If you're interested in these trails that Tracy's talking about, shoeshoptrails.com, or go and get the trail guide, which Shoeshop Tourism helps us put together.
Oh, right? Shoeshop Tourism's
huge partner. And they've stepped in as a sponsor for this whole project as well, along with the Shoeshop Community Foundation.
We're thrilled to have their support because it means a lot to get some good organizations behind it. Okay, so Blind Bay Bluffs, that's the part that Bonnie Baker was so keen on.
This conversation from sort of the thread from before. So Bonnie, in fact, now is exploring that with her friend Jan Papel. Originally, Carmen Massey and the White Lake Trail Stewards, who were part of the Blind Bay White Lake Trail System, sort of helped get it set up, and then sort of time restraints and things. And then Jan Papel, who's over in Sunnybrae, who knows Bonnie well. So you've got these trail guides stepping in and helping out. And Pat Hutchins, I think, is a photographer for that one. They've had some really, really interesting, because it's a challenging trail to get up. So we're all working, and I'm actually waiting in to help figure out a way to get to the very, very top of the lookout with Bonnie. So.
Yeah, because it's not a flat climb.
No,
there's switchbacks and it's challenging.
Different routes.
There's two routes. There's one sort of easier but long.
Yes.
And then one quicker but steep.
Steep and challenging. Yeah.
Yes. So it's not. We're not all just gentle rolling hills around here. There are some great challenging climbs.
And the teams are working for it here.
Some of them really are. And actually, Louis Thomas was just in my office yesterday and talking about how much he enjoyed his time on Mount Ida with Linda Franklin, and Jim Hoskins was their photographer. Jim's done three teams.
Huge.
So he's excited. And Louis Thomas was saying, here's these sort of partly or at least supposed to be retired people hiking up these challenging scrambled cliffs with rocks and stuff everywhere. And he said, but you know what? We all did really well.
I think
because maybe in the shoe swap, you know, retired, and what would that be, 65 or over, doesn't mean anything anymore. We're very active people. We keep moving. We keep exploring.
And hopefully, the more we do things like this, the more it'll be impossible not to be moving.
Yeah.
Because this is the place we live.
Yeah.
It demands it of us.
That's right.
So, and that's certainly, Louis will certainly talk about that. And there's a Kuwapmik web of pathways and movement and how important that is.
Yeah. So. Louis's story is so beautiful. It's about the little people on Mount Ida. Unbelievable. I mean, he's very gifted. He's got all of these legends in his head. We need to make sure that we've got opportunities to share those stories. Yeah. That we're giving lots of people the opportunity to learn.
Yeah.
Okay, North Fork Wild. That's another one.
Well, and
beautiful
and,
area.
And a really interesting story again, because it's this new conservation park we've just been working on with CSRD Parks in Area E. But came about as a gift from an individual, Peter Jennings, who, you know, has lived on this property for 40 years. And the whole time he's lived on it, he's just let it grow and become natural again.
Because it was logged at one point.
And then he found it, and it's right on the Perry River at the mouth. It's this exquisite place, and his vision has always been that it would then become a conservation park that people could enjoy in perpetuity. And how remarkable that, folks like Rona Martin, the area director, linked him with us and with the CSRD Parks, and this big conversation happens. The next thing you know, the regional district, and which is all of us together working, is going, this is important, let's do this, creating this conservation park. And then suddenly we've got educators from throughout the region. The Shoeshop Outdoor Learning Foundation really was captivated by the space because it's so unique on the Monashie Wet Belt. And so now they're a major part partner, bringing groups of school kids out to experience this place, but doing it in a way that's thoughtful and completely different than we've ever seen. So here's a team who are spending time in this place.
So Sarah Weens and Jeremy Ayat and their photographer. Who's their photographer? Oh, Sky Stevens.
Yeah, Sky Stevens.
Sky's got also two teams too that she's working with.
So. And you've got folks like Jeremy's our consulting biologist. So you've got folks who have a sensitivity to the place. Jeremy helped with the actual the master plan for the conservation park. And then you've got Sky, who's also an outdoor educator. So you've got this team that I think they spent quite a bit of time walking around barefoot in moss at one point or something.
I was out there for the, because they had the art camp
or lying down,
kind of elements with the outdoor learning camp last year. And I went out there to teach one plein air day. And Jaron Kaner is just amazing. And he talked about fox walking.
Yes.
And so you take off your shoes and you walk, because you don't want to mess up this moss, right? This beautiful carpet that's out there. And so he would explain how you walk gently, place your feet with, you know, conscious effort and don't, you know, don't run, because then you push the moss out of the way. And he explained about how long it takes to grow. And it was just really beautiful watching these little kids be so respectful and quiet and walking through. When we walked in the trail, he asked people not to talk, to do it quietly.
Yeah.
What an experience to watch all these little kids between 9 and 12 not talk while you walk for 20 minutes.
They're doing exactly what we were talking about before. They're being transformed. In fact, during the break, I remember the quote specifically from Brian Swim. He says, "Tremble with the magnitude of what you're about to do." And the Shuswap Outdoor Learning Foundation has been doing exactly that with groups. And it's, you know, so you shut up, close your mouth, stop talking and filling the space with noise.
Yeah.
Pay attention. It's it's pretty remarkable. That's North Fork Wild.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And already the development of a little signage, a little parking area. Yeah. I mean, it's been fantastic, the work that's done there. So it's very accessible. Enderby Cliffs.
So again, another iconic location and a hugely important a place for within the Squamic territory. So for the Splatson community, who are sort of the primary caretakers, that's a major area. So that's been very much part of that conversation.
Yeah.
And we all know the cliffs, right? Everyone goes, once a year, walk to the cliffs, see the flowers and stuff. But its presence really is more than it. Like the presence we feel of it is that kind of presence.
It's what is it? It's the Tepaklit.
The and again, I may not be getting my Squamic right, but Tepaklit Trail, which is the Squamic name, and so that's been renamed. The trail's been renamed, and
excellent. Sydney Whitehead is the artist, Pat Hutchins, and Brad Case is the guide.
Yeah,
what a great team. Cindy's excited because she's a pastel artist and loves flowers.
Yeah.
Well, so she was telling me about some orchid or something or other that was blooming when they were up there. Yeah, and she was just about off her, you know.
Well, and this is the moment, if anyone's interested in the Enderby Cliffs Trail, we worked with Splatson and BC Parks to kind of redesign the trail so it was easier to get up. And a few people were like, oh, I liked it when it was steep and straight, but it's ecologically more sustainable and easier to get at the top. But right now is when all the wildflowers are coming out, and that's, you'll see those things. Yeah. So it's,
well,
it's
that's
remarkable.
The thing. Like, you've got to be aware. Same with when I've been up to Mount Revelstoke, you got to know when those flowers are coming. Because if you get it the wrong time, it's like either flowers or horseflies.
Yeah.
Like you choose.
But both are part of the good experience.
Yes, that's right. Okay, the Kingfisher Trails.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to this. This is Joanne Salais. She's an artist from Vernon that has exhibited at the gallery before. She's amazing. And so her, Aaron Leon, is their photographer.
Aaron, whose
exhibition is, he's a photographer whose exhibition includes two series, Altered Landscapes and Objects of Indians, that deals with stereotypes of First Nations people. So he's their photographer, and who's their guide?
Neil Brook.
Oh, right,
Neil Brook, who kind of, he's, you know, one of that group of champions there who made Kingfisher Interpretive Center happen. So, so, you know, what a remarkable local indigene to be the guide for that place and help engage them in this story of what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it's been a dynamic one over the last few years. They've had to, you know, water has moved and they've had to rebuild. And,
that's right. It was quite disastrous.
Everything they do is about the health of this fishery that is key to the place we live.
Yeah, fantastic. I look forward to that one. So it's the Raven Trail, the Sadness Raven Trail, is actually being done in two ways.
Yeah.
So we've got a team that experienced it that are doing a project that's similar to what's happening in the exhibition, but that's the one that's going to be at the Prestige.
Right.
And then we've got another team that's doing an on-site installation.
Yeah, so you'll have to walk The Raven
you have to
trail.
Walk the trail to find it.
Yeah.
So Tom Brighouse was the guide for both of those teams.
Yeah.
But the artist on one, the on-site artist is Karen Raven, a collage artist. And the their guide was, or their photographer was Sky Stevens.
Yeah.
And then with the other team that Tom led, Janet Aitken is the artist and Jim Hoskins
is the photographer. Yeah. And then kind of the neat twist there is Janet Aitken is also the president of the Salmon Arm Bay Nature Enhancement Society, right?
Yeah.
SABNES. So he sort of...
And Tom is the grandpa of everything.
Exactly. So so it's just a really, again, really neat mix. Both of those, I'm excited to see what happens and emerges out of that.
So. And then South Canoe Trail, so the Troll Bridge.
Yeah, so, you know, and the neat thing with South Canoe is the story of South Canoe is really, it's as much human geography as it is landscape geography, because you've got this place, it's probably one of our most used trail systems in the entire region, but who knew? Because it was really off the grid, right? It was kind of social trails, emerged from, you know, motorized use, equestrian use, and then suddenly all these mountain bikers started showing up from the community because that was a cheap, easy way to get out, and it just has become this phenomena. It's hiked, it's snowshoed in the winter, the Nordic Society, sometimes you can ski all the way down from Larch Hills.
Oh, wow.
Everything's happening. There's an advisory helping to make the trails are evolving as we speak, and so Sutra... Brett, who's you know, our lead technical trail specialist, works with the trail lines. He went out with artist team.
Our artist team was Cynthia Langford and Victoria Gridley Hack is the photographer.
Yeah, so great photographer. Yeah. And
oh my
great
gosh!
Artist. But Sutra is also, you know, he's broad spectrum, but he's also at the core of him is this passionate mountain biker.
Yeah,
the Troll Bridge is this funky trail that he's rebuilt for mountain biking and.
Yeah.
It's just a piece of art itself.
Oh, yeah. And he's actually, that's what he's doing for the exhibition, is building a little boardwalk bridge in the show. Yeah. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, we got like less than a minute. Let's talk about ours, the last one, the Owlhead Trail.
Right,
so Phil and I could not let this pass without doing one. And so our little display is going to be at the Blue Canoe.
Yeah.
But we went up in the winter with the help of Gord Bushell and the Sick Moose Snowmobile Club.
Yeah.
They lent us snowmobiles.
Yeah.
First time for me. Well, actually, I once rode a snowmobile 25 years ago.
Yeah.
But, and not too many times for you either, was it?
No, I'm a non-motorized guide, but I must say there was a bit of a little grin on my face. I will admit it.
Just a little.
It was really fun.
Yeah. And your son, Ben, came with us and,
as a photographer. Yeah. So I'm delighted.
He was fantastic. Yeah. And I had my Sherpa, Eric, and that was great.
So we had people who actually felt comfortable driving the machines and then.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it was actually, a winter experience and you took us in. So we went up on snowmobiles. Snowshoes, snowshoed into the cabin, which has its own story, which we'll have to do when we come back, because it's kind of, we're already at the break time again.
Yeah.
And now,
as the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
Okay, so this dramatic moment goes back to something I mentioned last October, November on this show about an artist who did an exhibition installation at the Tate Modern in London. So this fellow, he's a Mexican artist, Abraham Cruz Villegas, I think, did an installation called Empty Lot. And if you saw pictures of it, it was a whole bunch of triangular raised beds in the Tate Modern that looked like they were filled with dirt. Although dirt is actually what comes out of your vacuum cleaner bag. They were filled with soil.
Yeah.
But what he did was he went around London and collected soil from parks and empty lots and boulevards and whatever he could find and filled these boxes with this soil. But there was nothing planted in them. Nothing was added to them. They were just plain old pieces of soil from parks. And then they were watered and let to grow to do whatever they were going to do.
In the gallery.
Yeah. So they had some lighting and they just were left. So it looked all very sterile and you know, like nothing was going to happen. Maybe a few mushrooms. I don't know.
Yeah.
So the show just closed. It closed on April 3rd. And I just was curious to see what had happened, like what had grown. And so I looked it up yesterday and discovered, sure enough, weeds grew. A lot of weeds. But lots of grasses and bindweed and things like that. Things that you'd probably find in boulevards in London. But I think what the point of it was is to really understand that when we look at something that we think is nothing, there's something there. Yeah. And the something that's there is the future something. And that we can't judge the future something by what is visible to us right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you showed me a quick visual of this, and like, so there are these triangular, repetitive, like they look like raised beds in the gallery.
Yeah.
But how interesting that conversation we're having before about expectation, right? So we bring in our expectation. Oh, there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. Again, and even, you know, using the word weeds, it may be invasive, and certainly our friends at the Invasive Species Society, who we work closely with, can help us understand what that means. But it certainly doesn't mean unnatural. Like anything right. that grows is growing because it's for real.
Yeah.
So here's this. We think our expectation is these sterile, repetitive, triangular boxes, but then suddenly it becomes unruly, it grows, it bursts with life, totally does what it's going to do, uncontrolled from the repetition that we're seeing. So I think that that's very, very, very telling in terms of what we're doing here.
Yeah, I think so too.
You know, it's the same kind of expression, but then to actually bring that into the gallery to kind of tease us to see it in a different kind of way.
Yeah.
It's also picking up on the themes of, you know, the tradition of ready or of the ready-mades, right? Duchamp, the found objects.
Yeah.
You know, soil is bringing, let's bring in the gallery and it's like a found object.
It is.
But suddenly
let's see what it can do.
Like Duchamp's stool and bicycle wheel, like what's it in the fifth or sixth version now? Because it's kind of its own thing. Whereas this is a ready made where it becomes something totally different. It's not the same thing when it came in.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
All sorts of themes that
I know
what we're doing.
You know? Absolutely. And then pointing out the thing about what you said about weeds is totally true. Like native plants are not weeds, really, right? We consider weeds the things that are invasive, but for us, most of what we experience in our lawns and everything are natural, like native plants that are supposed
to be there. In our lawns. And the things that are invasive somewhere else on the planet probably are really important.
Yes, yes.
I've heard Louis Thomas and certainly Bonnie at the Strathmetal Society, Bonnie Thomas, like they've talked about still understanding that these are medicines and they're part of the blanket.
Yeah.
They're part of
and
the
natural. And they tell their own story. I remember because we used to have a farm up in North Broadview, and my husband would look out into the fields where we've been amending the soil for years and years. And if he saw lots of lamb's quarters, he's so excited. Look at that. Good soil. Makes lamb's quarters, and lamb's quarters makes really good smoothies too.
Yeah.
Just so you know, it's very sweet and lovely. There's lots of things. In fact, our green smoothies are full of all kinds of native plants in the summertime.
Yeah.
It's just a kale smoothie in the winter, but it's still good.
So we'll wait for the invitation from the Tate Gallery for the,
For our exhibition to come there, yeah.
Because I think there's a connection.
I'll write a letter, you know.
Good. Yeah.
Okay, so let's get quickly back to the trails because we didn't even finish covering them all.
Yeah.
So our trail, we did the Owlhead Trail, and we went up, and it was when did we go?
It was late winter, March. So it was the tail end of winter. One interesting story with that conversation with Gord Bushell, who's part of the Eagle Valley Snowmobile Club. You'll see things happening all season up there, and they've already been started. There's a collaboration happening up in the Owlshead Cummings Lake area, which is, you know, the ATV Club, BC Park, Splatson, Rec Sites and Trails, the forest companies, Carl Kuster, who's an outdoor guide, the Snowmobile Club, ourselves, the Trail Line. So we're all working together because there's to say, wait a minute, how do we manage ourselves better recreationally in the Alpine? Because it's so sensitive. So that's partly why we wanted to feature that and show the collaboration between motorized and non-motorized user groups and this bigger picture, because they're serious about changing how we move in there, because there's damage that's been happening traditionally up to this point, and there's a real wholesale move to kind of help restore.
Yeah, and it's probably important to recognize too that there's a lot of motorized users who are very dedicated to conservation. They do not want to see these areas damaged.
They're driving this whole process.
Yeah, they're very dedicated.
But how interesting, when we stepped off the snowmobiles, they dropped us off, and then we walked into the forest trembling.
Yeah.
Everything goes quiet.
Yeah.
And then we sneak through. And I wasn't even 100% sure I had the right part, because we're under like 3 or 4 feet of snow.
Yeah.
So I was following sort of the compass readings. And then suddenly that cabin emerged.
Yeah.
And you were asking about the cabin. So the cache cabin.
Yeah. That's like a very old cabin.
It's a very, very old cabin. So, you know, the turn of the early 1900s, now there's more history to it, so I'm not the historic expert, but up in the high Alpine we have these Dominion Forest lookouts. There's one at Joss Pass. There was an old foundation up at Eagle Pass, and one of them certainly up at Mara Mountain. And so there were these relay cabins. So you can still find the old, in some of the trees. In fact, we saw one. Yes, some of the old telephone wire insulators, these glass insulators. So you're looking at something that's probably about 100 years old.
Wow. You just kind of forget that, that people 100 years ago had the capability of crawling up there and putting up equipment and building cabins.
And that was part of the routine. And there would be folks stationed there who would, come in with horses, and then they would, maintain that on a regular basis. So who knew the landscape? And there's folks who know some of that story who can tell it to you. Though keep it in mind, in perspective. I know, again, talking with Louis, he said, that 100 years, that's not very long.
I know, it's nothing for
you. Yeah, because we're talking
10,000 years.
Yeah, exactly.
So. And one of the beautiful moments of that, two actually lovely moments, but you making us stop mid-snowshoe and reading us Mary Oliver poems.
That was
talk about taking in your time and place and the moment to say, just look around and appreciate what it is. And
the one
poem about the owl, and it was just so beautiful, and was just a really important part of that experience to stop and let words, sort of redefine your moment.
Well, and invite us to be quiet. It's funny how words can sometimes get us to be quiet, right?
Yeah.
So Mary Oliver writes in one poem, she says, I've been standing around all day, which is mostly what I do. What else should I have been doing? Not just standing around, but standing as though with my arms open.
Yeah.
And it's just like, this receptive. And just she's a walking, attentive poet or artist, right? So doing what these groups are doing, paying attention, being present.
Yeah, for sure. And then one more trail, Mount Baldy.
So this
was one that had to kind of, it's an on-site installation. We've got a sculptor, Eric Kutchker is the sculptor, Jay Scholten is the guide, and Richard Kylo is their photographer.
Yeah.
And Jay was away, and so for quite
just
a few
back.
Months.
Just
yeah.
Got back,
so they kind of had to have their experience really quick.
Yeah.
So they were just out there a couple weeks into the spring, and it was apparently quite a lovely experience and brand new to the artist, and he'll be doing a site installation on there. And
perfect. And I love it that Eric has not been there, so he's experiencing it for the first time ever.
Yeah.
But then you have someone like Jay who just knows that area. Well, we work closely with him in CSRD Parks to help reinstate that trail. It used to be an old skid road up there. Folks would go up the little lookout, but got closed off because of a gravel operation. So we've redeveloped a new trail route around it. So suddenly it's possible for folks to go up again.
Mm.
And just some trembling aspen stands, which are critical areas for us in this region. We don't have lots of that. And then Eric, he was mentioning just, the frogs suddenly getting born, right? Coming out and saying, hey, it's time to be alive again.
Yeah. It sounded very exciting, and Eric said that for Richard and Eric, they're trying to absorb, and Jay was hiking, and he was going, up the mountain, and he kept having to, wait a minute, and turn around and find Jay's just disappearing around a corner, and he had to run and catch up. So
the artists now are pulling Jay back to rediscover the place as well. I think it's a great example of this new story.
Oh, this has been such an amazing project. So we are having the exhibition in the summer, July 2nd to August 27th, 2016, at Salmon Arm Art Gallery. And we are opening night is Thursday, June 30th.
Yeah.
So that's weird. It's a Thursday. Just saying.
Because
July 1st is the Friday, and we normally open on the first Friday of the month. So the gallery is going to be open on July 1st, apparently. We didn't plan on that in the beginning because being a holiday and being nobody downtown kind of, makes it hard to be open. But we decided that actually having opening night on June 30th and then being closed the next day seemed weird, right? So we're going to just make sure there's some hosts there and people can come and see the show on the long weekend. And and so installations, like, it's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
This is not just paintings on walls.
And I'd wanted to ask you about, are you seeing, because you've had a chance to talk to all the teams now, are you seeing themes emerge? And like, because it's not just paintings showing up.
No,
it's not, like,
and
it's,
in fact, it's all manner of media, like lots of mixed media, lots of integration of what the guides are offering, what the photographers are offering. And then the artists are taking all of that and saying, well, then I want to do this, then let's do this. And so we're actually seeing a huge diverse representation of media. And some of the artists are coming off the walls and doing things that are coming out into the gallery.
And they're breaking out of their their traditions too, right?
Yeah. It's going to be madness. Yeah. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Like you're going to have an experience. It's almost going to be like going on a trail to go into this show.
I just need to say, I'm so excited. And I also need to say thank you to you and to the Arts Council. Cause honestly, this wouldn't be happening without, I'm just the overwhelmed by the energy and the passion and the amount of work you guys are putting in. And then also all the sponsors who are helping make this happen.
Yeah. Right? We should absolutely recognize. Well, I mean, it's really hard to start listing, but we've gotten great help from the foundation, from Shoes Up Community Foundation and Shoes Up Tourism for sure. Well, Phil, this has really been a delight.
Oh, pleasure.
And like absolutely. I said, we could talk for another hour about this.
Well, we've got 14 trails, so we've got 14 programs to work.
Yeah. Okay, let's just start. We'll schedule that starting now. But thank you for coming on the show and talking about this. And so more information on the trails can be found.
ShoeshopTrails.com or go to the visitor centers and pick up the trail guide again, or contact Shoe Shop Tourism, or go to the tourism website. And I mean, Shoe Shop Tourism really is the collaborative sponsor who's helping get the word out on all of this stuff. But if you want updates and information, the ShoeshopTrails.com and then the art gallery.
Yeah, and then the website for us, salmonarmartcenter.ca, you can get information on the exhibition there. But come anytime in the summer, Tuesday to Saturday, 11 till 4, come and see the show. Pick up our publication. It'll be called Trail Mix, and it'll have all of the teams and all of the trails, and it'll be such a wonderful legacy thing to take away from this.
And you'll go and just keep adding to the story.
Yes, add to the story. Everybody can just get out there and keep adding their own story. All right. Thank you so much, Phil.
Oh, pleasure, Tracy.
See you next time.